Hej och välkomna till avsnitt 1261 av amerikanska nyhetsanalyser, Sveriges enda konservativa USA-podd med mig, Ronny Berggren. Den 6 januari ockuperades Kapitolium i Washington DC av tiotusentals Trump-anhängare som ville stoppa vad de menade var demokraternas valfusk. Här följer ett samtal med den amerikanske journalisten Brendan Gutenschwager som lyssnade på Trumps tal och sedan följde med i marschen mot Kapitolium. Varmt välkomna. Brendan Gutenschwager, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You and I have been talking before about, you know, the MAGA rallies and Trump's post-election, activities. And the latest thing was the big Stop the Steal rally, January 6th. And you were one of the observers. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep. I was there from early morning all the way through the day to watch the events as they transpired that day.
Can you guide me through, you know, everything that you witnessed and the things you saw and, you know, the day from your perspective?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. So the day started out, I began covering things over by the Washington Monument and by the Ellipse. That was where Trump had this Save America March planned. They had set up a stage there on the Ellipse, which, for those that aren't familiar, is just outside of the White House. And so it kind of allows for the White House as a backdrop and the Washington Monument to be on the other side of the stage, kind of looking out over the crowd. And so there was a very, very large crowd gathered there. People had been lined up basically from midnight onward because a lot of people came into town a day or two ahead of time for this event. It had been talked about for weeks. And so that crowd inside of the Ellipse filled up very quickly, and then they had an overflow crowd outside that was on the National Mall outside of the Washington Monument, many, many thousands there. I would say probably at least, several tens of thousands there total. And so that rally happened. The president spoke. He took the stage shortly before noon and then spoke for a while there to the crowd. They were very, very excited and just energized hearing from him. He then told them that they were going to march down to the Capitol, which that had been known ahead of time that that was going to be the next spot after the speeches were done there at the Ellipse. So I got going pretty quickly there, even before the president finished speaking, just because large swaths of the crowd had started to move there to get a head start on all of that. And so I got over to the Capitol just about 1 o'clock as the scheduled start time of that, although that was sort of delayed because the president spoke for a while there over at the Ellipse. So it took a while for the rest of the crowds to then finish up there and then make their way down to the Capitol. But very quickly, right from the get-go, things were very raucous there, very rowdy. And there was just a very, very loud chanting. People were pushing up against the police, trying to push back against some of the barricades they had set up, which were not very extensive barricades. Some of it was just plastic netting, sort of like plastic net fencing that you would see on a construction site. Others were some of the metal barricades, but those were kind of just placed a couple of them side by side or some individual ones that could be very easily moved, very easily pushed aside. And so the crowds right from the get-go, they were very, very rowdy already. Just minutes after 1 p.m., which was the scheduled start to all of this, there was pepper spray in the air, mace in the air, and very soon after that, flashbangs going off as they tried to get this crowd under control outside of the Capitol building.
But let me put in a question here, because when I followed it all on Right Side Broadcasting, you know, they basically broadcast all every Trump event, and the people I saw in that video were very peaceful, I would say, the people that marched towards the Capitolium. Do you have another impression, or was it just like the people in the front that, you know, made the confrontations?
Yes, so there were a lot of people just peacefully marching there over to the Capitol. You're right. And that's one thing that I had noticed. I did take some time to document that as I went from the Ellipse over to the Capitol, because it's a bit of a walk. It's maybe 20, 25 minutes or so. They're not immediately next to each other. And so, yeah, a lot of the people there, I think, weren't even aware of just how intense this is about to become and just what was ahead, but people up at the front were very much the rowdier ones that were actively pushing back against the police, And then the people nearby them, even the ones that weren't actively partaking in that, a lot of them were cheering them on, encouraging it. So all that was happening up front. And then just over time, crowds just continue to gather further and further back on the lawn of the Capitol, to the point where, you know, I would think people far back wouldn't have any idea just how bad it was getting up front and just how much things were clashing up front, because it was like two different worlds. It was like people just kind of casually hanging out, holding up their signs, holding up their flags, things like that at the back, as in the front, people were actively clashing with police, trying to gather large groups together to push up against some of these barricades to try to push the police back, which they were successful at doing several times. Saw some people that were actually taking some of these metal barricades and throwing them at the police, throwing some metal poles. So it was just very much like this diversity of actions and a diversity of people there, in that you had a totally different world going on near the back of the protest compared to what was happening up front.
Who would you say that these people in the front were? I mean, we have spoken before, and we have basically said that most MAGA rallies are peaceful, most Trump supporters are peaceful. So would you say that those people up front were different kind of, you know, Trump supporters? Or what is your assumption or your, well?
It definitely seemed to be some of the more, ones that are more aggressive. It's not the typical personnel that you would see at most Trump rallies. You certainly don't see this kind of action against the police at really any Trump rally. They were genuine Trump supporters, many of them. I know there were some reports trying to argue it was just outside infiltrators. There were a few of those that I saw, people that were definitely anti-Trump people that I had actually seen at previous protests that were present at this. And some of those people were even at the front lines. But by and large, it was true Trump supporters, you know, people that were just very, very angry. You know, it's hard to describe them as one specific group. I think it was many different groups just on the more far right end of Trump support, and maybe just the more radicalized, more aggressive, more prone to these sort of tactics to push back. And I think many of them saw the police defending the building as a sort of breaking of their oath. That's one thing that I commonly heard amongst many of them, is that they basically would have been okay with, you know, not pushing back against police at all if police would just step aside. However, of course, the police weren't going to do that. And so when they didn't, they took that as a sign of treason, as a sign of, you know, basically not fulfilling their oath to the Constitution. And that was their justification then for getting violent, escalating things and pushing back to try to move these police aside.
So basically, when you describe this event from the outside, you basically say that these people that, you know, occupied the Capitolium, they were the enemies of democracy, but they thought of themselves in the opposite way, that the enemies of democracy are the ones who basically are stealing the election. Was that their way of thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people were seeing this as the necessary means to establish more democratic elections and to make this more fair, because they saw the election as being stolen. So they thought that the people, both the police and then the lawmakers themselves that were upholding all of this, were not fulfilling their oath to the Constitution, and thus, you know, it required action on their part, in their view, to then take the Capitol building and go forth with all of this.
Yeah, okay. Well, please continue. Describe the following events.
Sure, yeah. So, you know, people continue to push up against the police. They were significantly outnumbered. You know, the crowd was in the size of the tens of thousands there very soon by 2 o'clock in the afternoon outside of the Capitol building. And I only saw at most maybe 150 total officers on that west side of the Capitol building. It was not much at all. Against a crowd of tens of thousands. Granted, many of those tens of thousands were further back, but there were more than enough up front to immediately outnumber the police, and then many behind cheering them on, and really just nowhere else for the officers to go, since the crowds were starting to form on different sides of the Capitol building as well. And so they continue to push back. Police at different times had to give up certain positions, had to sort of retreat and reduce the amount of area they were covering in order to try to keep their personnel together. And when they would do that, it allowed some openings on the sides. Very quickly, many of the Trump supporters had stormed through this outside scaffolding area that was sort of like a construction area and went through there, made their way over to a staircase that was briefly guarded by police before police were kind of forced to retreat as well. There was a brief pushback at the top of the stairs when they tried to prevent the Trump supporters from getting to the Capitol building itself. That didn't last more than 2 minutes before the police basically just stepped aside and let the crowd surge through. At that point, people ran up to the building. They kind of dispersed in different directions, but the group that I had followed went up to one area that had a door and some windows. They smashed into the windows in order to allow people to crawl inside the building and then unlock the doors from the inside. From that point, then you had just swarms of people coming in because they had just open access to the building, hundreds of people going through. A few people there were a little violent in terms of like aggressive, opening up doors, pounding on doors. They didn't see a whole lot of smashing too many things inside, but a few people did break some of the inner windows, especially I saw the reports when they had gotten to Nancy Pelosi's office and some of the other lawmakers that they weren't very fond of. They definitely went through there and did not leave them in a good state. But the lawmakers themselves, by the way, had been evacuated at that point, so none of them were affected, but the offices themselves were ransacked. And yeah, and they basically just went through. Many people that went through did stay peaceful inside in terms of I did hear a lot of calls saying, don't break anything, don't touch anything. This isn't the time to destroy it. This is our house. They very much saw this as sort of like a taking of their house. That this is the people's house. They had a right to be there. And so they, you know, the vast majority of the people that went through there were not trying to trash it, knock over mannequins or some, not mannequins, sorry, the busts, the marble busts of various political figures. And, you know, a lot of them really just seemed to just move through, chanting, you know, waving their flags as well, taking pictures. And then and at times when there were confrontations with police, that's where things got difficult. So it was very unusual, actually, inside, because on one hand, you had people that were basically just like walking through hallways. At the same time, you would have areas where there were these active confrontations with police, police officers getting pushed up against walls, pushed up against just people like inside of crowds, just getting squashed. There was one incident I wasn't personally present for, but I did review a lot of the footage from when they had tried to breach some of the inner offices of the building, and a woman was shot dead because of that. So it was very unusual that all inside the Capitol building simultaneously, you had people that just looked like your average everyday Trump rally goers that really weren't doing too much other than just walking through and just kind of looking around at everything. Other people that were chanting, others that were chanting and pushing back against police, and then some still further that were going so far into the building that they were actually being, you know, at these moments at gunpoint. And at one point, one woman was shot dead inside of the building. All that just happening simultaneously. Very, very unusual. Very, very unusual event.
Yeah, but you know, when I watch the videos of the politicians inside the chamber, they seem to be very afraid. And you know, there I think there were the bodyguards or even some senators that put, you know, chairs up to watch the doors and things like that. I mean, how much of a threat were these people to watch the politicians inside the chamber? Because I also watched a video where they shouted, "Hang Mike Pence." They basically looked on Mike Pence as a traitor because, you know, he wanted to confirm Joe Biden.
Yeah, and for that reason, along with just the fact that there was no security whatsoever at the building at that point, the fact that anybody could come in with anything, with any agenda, may not even be related to the Trump rally. I mean, very easily, as some agencies have said in the days since, this could have very easily been hijacked by some international agents if they wanted, because of just the lack of security here. The fact that really, once the Capitol was breached, anybody could have walked in with anything. And so for that reason, it definitely was a threat to the lawmakers, just by the sheer nature of it being so unpredictable and uncertain. As things happened, most of the people that went in did not have weapons. Most of the people walking through were not armed. Washington, D.C. has very, very strict gun regulations. So there was many notices put out before this event happened, telling people to leave their firearms at home, don't bring them, don't have them in Washington, D.C. I would even see some vehicles parked in Virginia right on the border with Washington, D.C. that people hinted probably had firearms in them, but were kept out of Washington, D.C. themselves. It very much seemed like something where people kept most of their arms and weapons away. There were some people that brought in zip ties and other smaller self-defense and also just sort of weapons of the mace kind, pepper spray, small batons, things like that. But for the most part, it wasn't very many weapons brought in, but I believe it was just the threat of that, the fact that that very easily could have happened, and there really wouldn't have been any security recourse in that moment for that to prevent that from happening. That is what scared so many lawmakers, and you know, rightfully so, to not know what was going on. For nobody, because there was such limited cell signal, a lot of people just weren't even aware of what all was unfolding and how it was happening in real time.
Were there any? I just watched an episode of Chris Hayes at MSNBC, and he showed some clips where people basically harassed police, and they basically jumped on police and things like that. Were there any Trump supporters that defended the Capitol Police?
Well, there were ones at different times I saw that tried to push officers aside, not in an aggressive manner, but more to just separate them from the crowd. And at times even tried to like stand in between people that were trying to fight the police and then the police officers themselves. It was very, very tense at any of those moments. And I think that there were some individuals that tried to de-escalate the direct hitting of police and the direct threats against police. However, there were many in the crowd that ignored those and continue to do as they did. It unfolded in different ways in different areas, because this was just such a conglomerate of so many different people that all came there from different areas. It wasn't just one large organized group that had a cohesive plan on what to do. So you had some people that were just very enraged, very much seeing these police officers as sort of enemies of the state and willing to fight them. Whereas others were saying, no, we are still the party of law and order. We're not here to fight the police. We just want them to step aside and we're going to take over the house. So you had people that had different ideas of how they wanted this to go and, as it unfolded, how they reacted to it. And so, yeah, there were a few that defended in other situations where officers did not have that happening and people were just actively fighting and clashing with them.
Yeah. How did this end? How did the crowd disperse? What happened? This went on for like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours. How did it end?
Yeah. So the crowds lasted there until a little after 5 p.m. That's when things started to finally get under control. They basically just started releasing large amounts of tear gas into the air. They came in from different sides and just released large amounts of tear gas to try to push the crowd back. Once they did that, they could secure areas immediately around the building and then kind of form a police line and then release more tear gas to push further back. And just over the course of about a half hour, finally was able to push the crowd back all the way past the lawn and then secure the entire area. And so that happened all shortly before curfew. I think it finally started to disperse at like 5:40 p.m., something like that. A curfew had been initiated in the midst of all of this for 6 p.m. local time. And so many people left because of that. They didn't want to be arrested, as well as just seeing what all was unfolding. People just started to leave in general. And so, yeah, and then a few did remain there even like at curfew time. I left. I didn't stay out past, and I know there were many arrests that were made for the people that stayed there, but it wasn't a very large group at that point. A couple hundred were left compared to the tens of thousands that had been out prior.
Yeah, but you know, one of my final questions then, how could this happen? I mean, the United States usually have a very militarized police when it comes to, you know, riots and things like that. How could this even be possible?
It really is a fascinating occurrence to try to study, because a lot of people are wondering that exact thing. How could this happen? And I think it was just such a unique combination of factors, the sheer size of the crowd. There aren't very many protests that have tens of thousands of people, you know, maybe 8,000 or a couple thousand, but this was a particularly large crowd. The uniqueness of the circumstances, the fact that it was happening on the Electoral College vote, which, you know, if I and many other observers thought that that would actually have led to an increased police presence, and that would have meant that there was more than just an average day at the Capitol if this had happened on January 2nd or something like that. But I believe that they didn't take it seriously, just how, you know, how this could become and what actually could unfold that day. They didn't have personnel in place ahead of time, and they didn't seem to respond very quickly. There's going to be a lot of questions about how that unfolded internally, just because the fact that it went on for so many hours, the fact that, you know, even, you know, to see the clashes at 1 o'clock, okay, that was at the beginning of it. Maybe they weren't expecting it, but people were still actively surging, fighting police, trying to get into the building, even at 5 in the afternoon. And I was shocked that there really weren't that many more personnel at that hour than there were earlier in the day. So, you know, I think that there's going to be a lot of questions about internally what decisions were made, because this is something where the police presence could have been there. The National Guard was in town. I saw them in different parts of the city leading up to this, but they weren't present there outside of that side of the Capitol building. And so one has to wonder, where were they at? Where were some of these other agencies at that were present? So that is something that, you know, people are asking a lot right now, still trying to figure out. The answers, you know, aren't very clear at this time, but it's definitely a question worth looking into.
Yeah, you mentioned that the crowd did not have guns because they are, you know, prohibited in Washington, D.C., but didn't the police have guns? Are they also prohibited?
No, police officers do have the guns there. Not necessarily every single officer in all circumstances, but many of the ones, including obviously some of those inside the Capitol, because a woman was shot dead inside of there. So yes, some of these officers were armed and simply chose not to use them for whatever reason. It may have been orders from above. It may have been individual decisions. I don't know the exact circumstances. But yeah, the officers were not unarmed. They just simply didn't use them in the vast majority of circumstances throughout this afternoon, throughout all of this.
I see. Okay, if we return to Donald Trump, who held this rally, and basically he basically asked his supporters to walk towards the Capitolium. How much responsibility would you say that Donald Trump has for, you know, the whole situation? I assume he did not incite violence, but he still said, you know, walk over there.
Yeah, he didn't incite violence. That is true. He did say for people to remain peaceful. Obviously, there's the culpability of having organized the event in the first place. You know, none of this would have taken place had he not called his supporters there, had he not brought people into town for this. You know, can a person be blamed for the actions of every individual? I don't believe so. I don't think that any person should be blamed entirely for the actions of the individuals. But one is going to have to look very closely at just how he responded to all of this, because that's another thing that's sort of being looked into now, is what was his reaction in the couple hours of this? Because he could have ordered in the National Guard, and he could have had more security personnel sent to the Capitol to do something about this as it was unfolding, and that did not happen. So if there were calls not made that could have been made, then there definitely is some responsibility there, and one will have to look into that. So, you know, in terms of having organized the event as a whole, you know, that's something that is always going to be associated with this event, because it simply never would have taken place had he not been saying, hey, we want everybody there to protest at the Capitol.
I read also that the FBI is, you know, warning that a lot of people will, well, basically participate in sort of maybe the same kind of protest during the Biden inauguration and the days before. How would you estimate, you know, will the same thing happen then, would you say?
No, I don't think you're going to see the same thing happen. The reaction across the board throughout the country has just been so fierce, and the attention has been so fixated on this that they are putting in very, very significant security measures there. I've already seen a large fence go up around the building that wasn't present before, the same kind that has been up around many different courthouses and buildings in other cities during civil unrest in the U.S. And those do tend to work in terms of protecting the building on the inside of that fence. Doesn't necessarily mean there won't be violence or, you know, protests and stuff outside of the fence, but I certainly don't see anything like this happening at the Capitol building again. In terms of Washington, D.C., I don't even think there will be, because there's just such a large police presence, military presence now that's being sent to that city, that people are nervous about it and they are largely looking at staying away. Already, Joe Biden has been pushing for a virtual inauguration even prior to all of this, just because of the pandemic. But now I was actually seeing messages from his inauguration committee explicitly saying, please do not come to Washington, D.C. That language I hadn't seen prior. And they didn't explicitly say it was because of this event, but I saw that messaging really start to heat up in the days after. So it looks like they're trying to make it as low key of an inauguration as possible in terms of the amount of people there. For that reason, I think you'll see groups maybe not organized there, but other parts of the country. That's what I think the focus is going to need to be on, not necessarily Washington, D.C. itself, but what's happening at state capitals and other parts of the country. But even Washington, D.C. itself, too. I mean, there has been a lot of talk, a lot of buzz around that. And so it really is going to be something over the next couple of days and weeks. Well, not too much time left now, basically the next couple of days and week, to see what gets organized and where people are going for that.
Yeah. So what would you say that this event have done to the political climate in the United States? You know, the whole polarization thing, has that become worse after this incident?
Unfortunately, I do believe it has. It has not been good. It's been a very, very toxic story overall on just really all fronts. And for that reason, it is just further divided people. Now the social media pushback that has come in the wake of this has been very, very significant. And that has also pushed the division further. I've seen just in the discourse and the way that people are interacting with each other. It's a difficult time. It's a really, really troubling time. And these events definitely did not help with that. It definitely seems to have done more for the division than it has to heal it. And you know, I think the next couple of weeks are going to be still reminiscent of that. And we'll see if this is the, as a lot of people have said, is this the beginning of something? Is this the end of something? You know, what are we seeing here? Is this just sort of like the last stand of all this and then people will come together? Or are some of these really, really deep divisions that we're seeing here to stay now beyond this presidency and, you know, even potentially beyond any kind of Joe Biden presidency? It may be something where it's just so divided at this point that people really back into their corners and, you know, and don't converse with each other as much as they used to.
Yeah. My final question then, you know, before, you know, the whole election, most people assumed that Donald Trump would have a strong position, whether he won or lost, he would have a strong position in the Republican Party. I am not so sure about that anymore. What are your thoughts about, you know, what does Republicans feel these days about Donald Trump?
There's definitely been a lot of talk about what his position will be going forward. There's many Republicans that have just called for a sort of end to the Trump era and just sort of forgetting that type of politics and moving past that. Others that are very much still behind that and a lot of the ideas and the policies that came with that, sort of like the America First type policies. There's been talk about if this will splinter the Republican Party and that you may see the emergence of a further right America First type party separate from the Republican Party. It remains to be seen if that will happen. That would be very you know, difficult to see happen in the American political system since it's just so two-party on so many fronts. But there's just been such division over this, even within the Republican Party, that it, especially because, you know, Donald Trump himself does not go away. He continues to be a person that can have a voice and have a presence somewhere. The way that that interacts with the Republican Party going forward in 2021, 2022, nobody knows. Nobody knows, because it's just never been like this. There's never been a presidency like this. And there's never been a president, a character, you know, a person in the House that has been as Donald Trump has been. And so his force and his very unique following and the way that his supporters will go with him no matter what, whether that is as a Republican going forward or as something else, that could have a huge, huge impact. And it may not be something that actually splits the party, but the threat of it splitting the party may mean that he continues to have more of a hold on the Republican Party going forward than some Republicans would actually like. So, you know, it's going to largely depend on what Donald Trump does going forward and how these next couple years unfold, and then, you know, how his supporters and his base go with that.
Right. Well, thanks a lot for taking time, Brendan. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a great conversation, as always. I appreciate it.
Det var avsnitt 1261 av amerikanska nyhetsanalyser, en konservativ podcast som finns för att ge dig perspektiv på USA som svensk media inte ger. Stöd gärna med en gåva på swishnummer 070 30 28 95 0 eller via hemsidan på PayPal, Patreon eller bankkonto. Det var allt för idag. Tack för att ni har lyssnat.